Hello, this is Phyllis Furumoto with Reiki Balancing Form and Essence. We're continuing on with our exploration of the individual precepts. Today we're going to look at honor your parents, teachers, and elders. And I have with me Donna Stetzer. She's from North Carolina. And
close.
And Donna, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Phyllis. I appreciate being invited.
Donna, first of all, I'd like to for you to share with the listeners your story of how you met Reiki and what that was like for you.
Well, I met Reiki about 15 years ago, having grown up a very left-brained person.
Mm-hmm.
And I had found myself exploring methods of healing.
Uh-huh.
And I was very surprised by that, but I did it anyway. And I went to a kind of a mystery school situation and in Black Mountain, North Carolina. And one of the people who was there was a Reiki master. And she was going to introduce the concept of Reiki. And I ended up taking her class. I'm being initiated by her, and in first degree, and then also in second degree, and as a master. And it was interesting for me because in my first degree class, I was just stunned by what was happening and had no understanding of it, and simultaneously realized that I had found what I didn't even know I was looking for.
Uh-huh.
And I had found my way. I had found my path. I had found what has become my spiritual practice. And so, looking back on my first degree class, I didn't know it at the time, but I really, strangely enough for an American, I really embodied this particular precept. Something about it always drew me.
So I'd just like to stop you for a moment. Sorry for interrupting.
No, no. That's
but when you talk about mystery school, what does that mean?
Well, that's a really loose term that I'm using. It was a school where there was a husband and wife who had a method of healing that they taught. I don't know that it had a name. They had brought a variety of different modalities together under...
One roof,
yeah. And that was kind of what they were calling it.
Uh-huh.
I don't know if that is at all accurate in some kind of definition way, but that's kind of what it was.
It was a bunch
of stuff under one arm. It was like a sampling of different things, which was good for me because I didn't know much about anything except my left brain.
Uh-huh.
And actually, if you had told me I would ever... go to some place like that, I would have laughed at you.
Uh-huh.
But there I was, and that's where I met Reiki.
Okay, so I have another question for you. Excuse me for interrupting.
No, that's...
So what does it mean you were in your left brain?
It means that I was not in touch with my feelings. I wasn't in touch with my creative self. I was way into controlling my life and having it be the way I thought it was supposed to be. I was very... invested in being right, and don't mess with my calendar once I get it set up. It was a very rigid life, and I never realized how much energy it took for me to maintain that way of doing. I really wasn't being at all. I was just doing.
Uh-huh.
But I was mostly felt like I was spinning in circles.
Uh-huh. So was there... was there something in your life that propelled you to do this, or just one day you woke up and found yourself there?
I think it was, you know, I can't be specific, but looking back, my speculation is that it was that I never quite bought some of the stories that I had been told about why I was here and who I was and what I was supposed to be doing. They didn't seem to fit. They seemed too tight for me, you know, especially in the context of some of the religion that I was brought up in, which was didn't have a lot of flexibility in it. And it wasn't feeding me. You know, I was looking for something that was supportive rather than directive.
Great. So then you ended up at this mystery school.
Right. Met the person that was talking about Reiki, took first degree, you know, kind of had this affinity for this particular precept. And
even in first degree.
In first degree. And I mean, of course, at that time, I couldn't even wrap my left brain around it. I just felt drawn to it and began to think about, well, okay, honor your parents. That's pretty, in a literal manner, honoring my parents was pretty clear. I could define what that meant on a beginning level. And also my teachers, and also my elders. And then I began to realize that my elders and teachers were sometimes younger than me, and really quite much younger than me, such as my grandchildren, my children, etc., and even non-human animals and plants were actually something that I found myself feeling a great deal of respect and wanting to honor in some way. So, you know, I worked with that for a while, and then I had my second degree, and I just continued to work with the precepts, and this one still kept really drawing me, because I was getting that it wasn't about receiving an honor, that there was and it wasn't an act of honoring, it was a way of being in relationship that was honorable, and that acknowledged and appreciated and respected everyone, everything. And then I had the good fortune to take a trip to Japan with you and a group of people. And what I got to see when we got there was this precept in action. I mean, from getting on a bus and having gray hair, or just, you know, being over 19, the young people immediately, without thinking about it, stood up and gave me their seat. And it was done in a way that was honoring, and it also, I also got to see them as honorable. Yeah, it's like...
So it's hard to explain,
it is hard
isn't
to
it?
Explain. It is hard to explain.
What are the qualities that honor has in it that we might be able to relate to? Because, you know, this is something that a lot of people have trouble with, is this word honor. Mm-hmm. And I know when I was a child, one of the admonitions that I always got was, always honor your father. Mm-hmm. And I would go, well, I don't know what that means. And, you know, I'd ask my friends, and they would go, well, I haven't ever heard that before. Mm-hmm. And so it was it's a very strange concept. But, you know, I went through, well, do I obey him? Do I worship him? Does he always... You know, is he always right? Mm-hmm. And, of course, being, I guess, a kind of built-in rebel, I didn't want to believe any of that stuff. So it was a big struggle for me, too, somehow, to find out the word honor. Mm-hmm. And so now in my life, I have this feeling of honor, but to describe it is something very different.
It's a bit tough. One of the things that it encompasses for me is when I am honoring and honorable, I accept myself and others as they are. I take the gifts that I receive with deep respect. I offer my gifts openly without attachment to whether they're received. And there's this energetic of it. I mean, when I studied in an Aikido class, when I learned to bow, it put me to tears. And when I was in Japan and I went to look to a sword shop to look at swords, and I held some of them, and I just was infused with this understanding of honor.
Uh-huh.
And related to it on such a visceral level that it moved me to some new understanding of the precept that really is quite difficult for me to put into words, but it's been such a gift to through a simple act of making eye contact and heart connection and having a little bow to another person and receiving the same from them, there aren't any words necessary. So I just find it to be an intriguing concept. And in my culture here in America, it's, I think, not very well understood, or understood very differently than it is in some other cultures. I think we give honors in the sense that we award people for certain behaviors, but I'm not sure we really honor one another in our daily living as human beings.
Well, I think it's a strange concept, and it's very difficult to understand, because one of the things, of course, that most students do when they hear this precept is the first thing that may come to someone is, well, how can I honor my father because he beat me? Or how can I honor my mother because she left the family? Or how can I honor my teacher because they just teach me crap? Or something like that. And it's a very interesting process for people to go through this particular kind of questioning into another kind of questioning.
Right, and you know, that's where I began in my relationship with this precept, but I just see that I can honor my father, you know, and there were a lot of things about him that I didn't like. You know, I didn't like how he treated me sometimes. I didn't like his authoritarianism. But what I got in the end was that this man loved me, and he gave me all he had. And he did his very best, and I honor him for that.
And how did you reach that? I think that's a huge leap, isn't it?
Well, it didn't happen in a week. I allowed the precept to give me the opportunity to just keep asking questions of myself, similar to the ones that you've asked now, and to to carry me to a place where I really was able to honor myself. And when I got to that place, it was kind of a downhill journey for a while, because it became much easier to honor all else. So I think that was an integral part for me, and it had to begin with honoring sometimes some people that had been a real challenge for me in my left brain, or in from a psychological perspective, you know, no heart mind.
Right. So does this have anything to do with forgiveness?
Well,
or is that another paradigm somehow?
It could be related, and I think that for some, I think it might be something that comes up for some of us as we work with this precept. For me, it wasn't about forgiving him. It was about just accepting him as a person who loved me and did the best he could, even if sometimes that looked really weird or didn't feel so great. So I don't know that I was harboring resentment or needing to forgive him. I was needing to just accept him.
Uh-huh.
And I don't know, maybe that actually took me to a place of forgiveness. Without being conscious of the concept of forgiveness. Uh-huh. I just probably, now that you've asked me that question, I probably just forgave him.
Right.
For anything that I felt he had done, or any way he had wronged me, or whatever.
Right.
I just probably organically forgave him.
Uh-huh. Well, you know, what's really interesting, this is the third interview on these precepts, and what has come up in the other two is this concept of acceptance, like accepting people for who they are, accepting the situation in the present, and not worrying about, you know, the future or what might happen, or understanding divine order, or, you know, it's a fascinating thing that it comes up all through it. So do you feel like in the whole of the precepts that acceptance as is an act of something that we can do to create peace in our lives, but to create the space of peace? Or I don't know, it's a question that I have just comes.
Acceptance is one word that could apply. Another word that's more potent for me is surrender.
Surrender.
And uh-huh. vulnerability.
Hmm. So can you define those words for us?
Well, so I always thought that surrender meant you had to just give up and do what somebody else wanted and subjugate myself to them in some way. And what I discovered was that surrendering is an act of trusting myself and trusting the other person to meet up eventually in a place where honor prevails. And in that place, we're just equal. One is not having power over. Uh-huh. We have power with one another. And I learned then to allow myself to be vulnerable, to allow myself to take risks about sharing my feelings and open my heart to other people and trust them to not slay me in some uh-huh. way. And what I finally got to was that one of the most powerful places I can go is into my own vulnerability.
Uh-huh.
I discovered that surrender and vulnerability are actually quite empowering. And I mean, the first trip was pretty scary uh-huh. when I went to those places, and the second and the third. But it got easier and easier, and now I actually strive to be there.
Wow.
Because it serves me in a way like nothing else has.
Uh-huh. So can you, for those people who like stories, can you share something, or is it too personal?
No, I wouldn't feel it was too personal. Let me see if I can think of something.
While she's thinking, I just want everybody to know, if you hear ambient noises like bowling balls rolling down the bowling alley or drips of water, it's just started this amazing storm outside, so I don't know if it's recording, but we're doing this in the midst of an amazing thunder and lightning storm here in Arizona. So. So Donna's thinking of an example.
Well, I'm not sure this is an example, but it was a moment in time where I was so emotionally open, feeling so accepting of what uh-huh. was in that moment, and and in surrender to a divine gift. And I think that took me to a place of vulnerability. And in that moment, I had my daughter and my firstborn grandchild had come to stay with us for a while. And my granddaughter was just a little newborn. And I just picked her up one night. It was a starlit night, a full moon. And I walked out onto the deck with this child in my arms, and I held her up to the heavens, and I said, "Morgan, behold that which is greater than you." And the reason that I tell that story is because I allowed myself to also recognize that there was something greater than me. And it didn't have to be a religion. It didn't have to have a format. It just was so.
Uh-huh.
And after that moment, I was able to take whatever it was I got from that and actually look another human being in the eye and show them my feelings.
Uh-huh.
Not talk about my feelings, but show them my feelings. In fact, it was kind of funny. I who would never cry had to carry a Kleenex box around because I started crying a lot,
uh-huh.
You know. And it was such a gift. And somehow this concept of honoring took me there,
uh-huh.
To that place. And I really value this precept,
uh-huh.
Very much in my life.
Mm-hmm. So were your parents alive when you had some of the insights that you did about your father and your mother? And
No, they weren't.
Uh-huh.
They were both passed on.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh. I was interested to know if that changed your relationship with them kind of on the physical level, how that might have happened. So do you have somebody in your life that might have happened with?
I mean, let me go back to my mother and father, because even though they weren't in body,
yeah,
it changed my relationship with them.
Oh, good point.
I mean, it really did change my relationship with them.
Yeah?
Uh-huh. Same with my grandmother, grandfather. I mean, it became this feeling of ancestral honoring for me.
Uh-huh.
And that went in two directions. It went, you know, way, way back to those who had come before, and it also went forward to my children and my grandchildren. And I have a daughter from whom I am estranged, and yet, because of my willingness to be in my own vulnerability and to surrender to what is and to accept things as they are, I'm able to keep the door open.
Uh-huh.
I have no idea what will happen, but I have space for her to be in my life. And even though our communications are few and far between and they have been fraught with, you know, great drama over
uh-huh.
the years, I have, I honor this child. I honor my firstborn child, even so, with all of that, you know. And
so you don't worry... You don't worry about having been a bad mother or anything like that?
Well, I did at first.
Uh-huh.
I mean, and at that point, though, I wasn't so in relationship with the precepts either.
Right.
But, you know, and I did it because I took the blame that was offered to me.
Uh-huh.
And now I simply don't take that on as mine, and I don't fault her for having whatever feelings she has. If that's the way she holds it, then that's the way she holds it.
Right.
And she's not wrong or right, and neither am I. And a great piece of this for me was surrendering and relinquishing the need to be right. I don't have to be right anymore. I just have to be. And that's a big one for me.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh. So I know this is probably, I get a little personal sometimes, so if I go over the bounds, you'll just tell me, huh?
Okay.
Okay. So did you get through these processes all on your own? Or did you have therapists, or did you go to workshops? Because they seem like very big steps to be able to be a mother and to give up your guilt about not doing the right thing for your daughter. And obviously, for some people, that would be true, because if you did the right thing, she would love you and be close to you. I mean, you know, there are all these kind of assumptions that we have about our mother-child relationships, but they're really assumptions. And I think that, you know, sometimes in our daily life, it feels like we really need help. So I'm just wondering if you did that, or you did it just by practicing Reiki, or what the process was, just to give people an idea about what they could do.
Well, I did engage in some talk therapy.
Yeah.
And it was useful to a point, but it put me back into my left brain, and I am quite adept at telling a therapist what they want to hear. You know, and I played the game. And once I realized that that's all that I was doing, I stopped.
Uh-huh.
You know, I stopped playing the game, and I simultaneously got the opportunity to caretake a piece of land that is precious to me and my partner, Becky. And on that land, there are so many, everywhere I look, I see natural order, I see surrender, I see vulnerability, I see trust, I see power, I see interaction and relationship. And all I have to do is mow the grass, you know? That's not such a hard job.
Okay, like if I have a hard time with this, but I just want to relate, like, just tell me a little story about how you see surrender on your land.
So when the rains come, and
uh-huh.
they're really hard,
right?
I see the earth move.
Really?
See the ground move in response to the water.
Uh-huh.
Okay? And I see the trees washed clean and refreshed because they're willing to, you know, just stand in the rain. I see the plants that grow there being available to us to nourish us as food, to
uh-huh.
nourish us as medicine,
mm-hmm.
and they're willing to be in relationship in that way, to surrender parts of themselves so that we can benefit.
Uh-huh.
And Betty's an herbalist, and we're surrounded by all these wonderful plant beings that, you know, say, well, here, you can have this part, and you can make medicine from it. And so she does, and it keeps us healthy.
Uh-huh.
Keeps us healthy.
That's beautiful. So where were we going with this? We were going with my question about how did you come to these realizations and so on.
So
it's from your experience of the natural world,
right.
and your treatments,
right.
well, and living with the precepts.
Right. Primarily daily self-treatment.
Yeah?
Yeah. After first degree class, I still had this part in me that thought, okay, well now I have to do this every day or I'll be a bad student.
Right.
I mean, you know, I think that's pretty normal.
Very normal.
So, and it got me going. And then I didn't really feel much at first, but I just kept doing it.
That's pretty normal.
Yeah, that's pretty normal too. I just kept on, and I began to notice that when I do my self-treatment, usually at night when I go to bed, that when my head hit the pillow, my hands came up over my eyes. And it became just a natural order part of my life.
Uh-huh.
That I just did. And now, when I don't do it, it feels weird. You
really?
Know, if I decide that
you don't get too tired to do it?
Well, yeah, that's what I mean. When I think I'm too tired to do my treatment, you know, and I kind of just roll over on my side and say, well, I'll do it in the morning or something, I often will roll back over and put my hands over my eyes. And, you know, I may not get far. I may not complete the treatment. And it's my practice.
Uh-huh.
It's my practice. It's, you know, Reiki has become my spiritual practice.
But what does that mean to you?
Well, it means that I have this place that is always there, that's sound and solid, that I can trust to support me. No
uh-huh.
matter what, it doesn't take words, it doesn't take thought, it doesn't take approval of anyone else, it doesn't take me being right. I just put my hands on myself and I treat myself, and life has become pretty easy, actually. Sometimes I, you know, the only prayer that I can offer up is standing out on the land, and I just look around and I say, thank you, thank you, thank you. I thought when we met this land that we would buy it and own it.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, this was many, many years ago. Well, that's not possible. You know, that's one of the gifts that I received. I can be in relationship with the land.
Uh-huh.
You know, I don't own it. It doesn't own me. We live in community. We
mm-hmm.
live and we work in harmony. We, yeah.
Amazing. So out of this precept, that sounds like a kind of commandment or rule
mm-hmm.
about obeying your parents.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you end up going through this whole process
mm-hmm.
of changing your relationships with, you know, the people who have come before, your mother, your father, your grandparents, great-grandparents, your daughters, your grandchildren, and so on. And then after that, you end up entering a doorway that looks like a spiritual practice. Like, how does this happen?
Well, it wasn't a doorway. It was just, I was there. I
uh-huh.
just realized one day that this practice is what sustains me. It's what feeds my soul. It's what's given me a sense of community that's wherever I go. My community allows me to be who I am.
Mm-hmm.
Do it my way. And, you know, the other person, the other people, they get to have the same, they get to play by the same rules. You know?
Mm-hmm.
And I use the word rules really loosely, but we're just in this relationship, and it's not about not about who wins.
Wow.
Oh, that was a big one.
That was a huge lightning crash.
Was it
not on the recording or what?
Was it something we said?
I don't know. It was something you were about to say. What were you about to say?
I don't remember.
Great.
Yeah.
So, you know, it sounds like that what's happening is that you're kind of morphing, we should say, into show gratitude to every living thing.
Mm-hmm.
Like, and sometimes during this little talk, it seems like That's the precept you were talking about. So I'm just wondering, do you have a connection with the, these two together?
There's no way that I can behave, be honorable and honoring without feeling gratitude and oh, it gets even harder now to talk about. it's so simple when it happens. It feels so simple when it happens, when I experience it. And the words are just really somewhere.
Is it that you don't have words? Or, I mean, like there's no vocabulary? Or that the experience is actually beyond words?
For me, I think it's beyond words. It's a holy place. It's a place where I can go anytime I want to by living the precepts, by saying thank you, and by treating myself. I wish I could find some words more to talk about what I'm feeling right now. Sorry.
Me too, because we're on the radio.
Yeah, really. Do we have a camera?
Well, you know, it's wonderful to reach a point, though, in our lives where, on one hand, what we're experiencing is beyond words, and in another way, we're actually connecting without words. You know, so there is this very interesting juxtaposition, and I would venture to guess that most of the people who are listening to the show today, and or who will in the future, can relate to what you're saying, which is really remarkable. I find this to be something sort of out of the realm of my understanding of the universe up until about 20 years ago, which is amazing for me. So I lived my first 40 years imagining that either people argued about the nature of the universe and always had different experiences, or that they all agreed, and then they were kind of like cults where everybody, you know, just believed the same thing without any brain in it. And when I got into Reiki, I thought that I had entered into something called a healing technique that had a lot of Japanese stuff in it. And then, really, and then, you know, when I was in my like 12th or 13th year of being a master, my friend John Wallace and I were talking in Santa Fe, and I said, you know, I really want to find a spiritual teacher. And I was looking at the Dalai Lama or looking at yoga, some, you know, Guru Mai or somebody. I kind of was interested in Osho because he sounded so crazy. And or the Sufis who really love spiritual madness, which I felt like that's kind of where I was. And John looked at me and he said, you know, you have your own spiritual practice. You just don't know it. And I said, I do? And he said, yeah, Reiki. And I said, no. And I thought, well, then my grandmother had to be like really the special guru teacher. But what I realized is that as, you know, we have to kind of get a grip, because as masters, in some way, we're really master students. We're just leading other students because we've practiced it more. But the true teacher is Reiki.
Absolutely.
Yeah?
Absolutely. Anything that I can find the words to share is just a sharing.
Right.
You know, the Reiki will teach. Absolutely.
And, yeah.
That's how it happens for sure in my experience. And,
right.
And I was never really drawn very much to looking for a spiritual practice. In fact, I didn't want one.
No?
No, I didn't want one. I didn't trust I didn't trust them. Uh-huh. I felt like they often were just another way of making me feel bad about myself. You know, I mean, really, that sounds rather harsh, and I don't mean to offend anyone. Uh-huh. But for me, it wasn't where it was at.
Uh-huh.
And Reiki is somehow different. It doesn't ask me to do anything, ever, except treat myself and see what happens.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And I get to treat other people and allow them to have an experience of it, or initiate people into the practice and let them go then and have their own experience. And I know that they'll get some gift.
Uh-huh.
From it. There's no doubt in my mind. I have no idea what it is, and I don't ever need to know. You know, that's theirs. I guess it's the simplicity that makes it hard to speak about. You know, when I get into trying to find the words that it starts sounding kind of more complex than it is.
Right.
You know, and that's where I start stuttering.
Well, you know, it's very interesting because as human beings, we have this great paradox of actually being very simple. I mean, mm-hmm. We need food, we need shelter, and we need love. And somehow, in some kind of balanced, coordinated effect. And then we end up doing this, getting more and more complicated after that because... Mm-hmm. We think we need things and mm-hmm. we need other relationships and so on. And yet, I'm just now finding it more about my spirit, about my physical body than I ever wanted to know. I mean, you know, this whole thing with cancer is just such a crazy experience. And, you know, I just have... anyway, it's true. I just am knowing more, a lot more, and our bodies are so complicated and so miraculous, and so amazing, and yet it all seems so simple. I mean, isn't that a fantastic paradox?
Well, it is, and our bodies are also very forgiving, and I think they are forgiving because they house our spirit. And, you know, I've heard it said that we're spiritual beings having a human experience, which sounds a bit New Agey. And sometimes when I'm on the land where I uh-huh. live and holding a cat
uh-huh.
or mowing the grass or whatever, you know, walking the labyrinth, it's on our land. It's what's so.
Uh-huh.
It's just what's so for me. It is that simple. And it's open. That's opened me in a way that has allowed me to really soften myself in this world.
Uh-huh.
You know, I was pretty hard. I was pretty detached from my feelings. And what a... difficult life I had until I figured that out. Mm-hmm. And now, you know, the things that sound like would make it more complex and difficult, you know, have actually made it easier. It takes a lot less energy to live now that I've come to this place of seeing things in their simplicity.
Mm. Is that a little bit like this thing about this phenomena of seeing a half a glass of water and saying the glass is half full or half empty? Because I feel like, you know, we can see, we can look at any situation and see the complexity of it,
right.
Or we can see the simplicity of it.
Right.
You know?
Well, it is perspective.
On some level, it's just perspective.
It's just perspective, and one of the things that I think I've realized is that I can see that healing happens when change occurs. And uh-huh. the change doesn't have to look like I thought it was would or like someone else wanted it to be.
Right.
It's just that a change has occurred, and I then have another place into which I can move
mm-hmm.
to take another small step or a big leap or, mm-hmm. or whatever. But it's just through practice that I've gone there.
Mm-hmm.
It's through practice.
Mm-hmm.
It's through actually embodying the precepts
mm-hmm.
and not living them just in my mind,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
but having been with them in relationship for long enough now that I've kind of integrated them. And I think that's part of why it's hard to talk about them.
Uh-huh, because they're not outside of
they're
you.
They're not outside of me.
Oh, that's an interesting right. point. Uh-huh.
I can't imagine my life without Reiki.
Mm-hmm.
It was so different before, and I have received so many gifts from through my practice, from the people I've met, and I don't see an end to it. It actually, it just gets better and better and better, and more simple.
Uh huh.
Sometimes I struggle because I meet a challenge and I, you know, have this reaction where I go to an old way.
Uh-huh.
And I notice that I've done that and I go, oh, well, wait, don't forget, you have a choice.
Right.
You can go back
right.
to that old way and you know where that'll get you.
Right.
Or you can take a breath, treat yourself, and let what's in you
right.
come up and guide you to your next best step.
Uh-huh.
Whatever it is.
Uh-huh.
So it's kind of a feeling of living with one foot in the relative universe and one foot in the absolute universe most of the time. And I don't mean that in any kind of... I mean, it sounds a bit arrogant as it comes out of my mouth, but it's not.
Okay,
it's,
so let's take the arrogant part out. And,
yeah.
And you can see yourself as, you know, like a Goliath or a giant or something with one foot in the relative world, one foot in the absolute world. So your body becomes the bridge.
Well, I hadn't. Those are some pretty good words. I hadn't thought about it that way,
but
actually, my humanness.
Right.
Whoa!
Oh, excuse me for screaming over the video.
That was a big one. We're okay.
I don't know if this was really a good idea. I guess we should be very grateful. Well, I'm definitely grateful for the rain. We need the rain.
Yes.
And I'm hoping that there aren't too many forest fires that just got lit by that one spark.
Holy.
We're getting in deep here. Or what?
We are. Maybe we should change the subject.
Okay, listeners, I hope that you guys have a good thunderstorm on your end, too. So, where were we?
I had one foot in the relative and one foot in the absolute, and lightning struck me.
Really? And that was it. That's all she wrote.
That's all she wrote.
So, just to make it clear for the listeners, way back when I was trying to explain what I thought was kind of a function of Reiki, I was also introduced almost 30 years ago, to a practice called Aikido, and it's a Japanese martial art. And there was a man by the name of, I've forgotten his name right now. Oh, Koichi Tohi. And he was a great teacher, and he talked in the Aikido about the absolute and relative universes and how in the absolute universe, that was the universe of oneness and of accept, you know, it's just so. The sun And the moon are there, the stars are there. This is how we are, this is our bodies, and so on. And if we are willing to accept that as just so, then we have access to the absolute. And the relative universe is where is the world in which we're born. We come out of our mothers, we are one, so we're a part of the absolute. And then the umbilical cord is cut, and we instantly become a part of the relative. Mm-hmm. And it feels like that in our lives as human beings, we're constantly struggling to get back to the absolute. But in truth, the magic of our life here on Earth is to be able to, as you said, embody both, or mm-hmm. to straddle these two, creating this movement back and forth between the absolute and relative universe until, wow, there's another one, instead of becoming opposite ends of the spectrum, they become a continuum, mm-hmm. huh?
Yes, and Reiki has given me that gift.
Uh-huh.
I can find nothing else to attribute it to.
Yeah. I feel like that's the essence of what Reiki gives us, and also is what Reiki offers us, because we have to actually make effort.
We do, and every single one of us can go there.
Right. Isn't that amazing? Well,
yeah, I mean,
we don't have to have, like, certain criteria, be a certain height or anything.
No, just, I mean, we're all special.
Uh-huh.
And we all are frail
uh-huh.
as human beings, and we can all absolutely be in what is just so, be in oneness,
mm-hmm.
be connected. Every step we take, we don't go there and then come back to the relative.
Right.
You know, we are there, and we are in the relative world as well. It's just so. I
mean, well, you definitely have the just so down.
Yeah.
So, I for the listeners, I hope that it inspires you, or confirms, anyway, this part of us which can get simpler and simpler and say, well, you know, that's just so. It's something I can't change. And it's something that I actually, maybe eventually we get to the point where we don't want to change. And when we get to that place, then I feel like this word that you said, embodiment, has really taken hold.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, I used to say this embodiment all the time, and somebody finally asked me, well, what do you mean? And I said, well, it means that it actually comes into your body.
Mm-hmm.
Huh?
Mm-hmm. For sure.
And I never would believe that,
well,
you know?
No. It was kind of a funky word for me in the beginning.
Yeah.
I didn't quite get it either.
But it does happen.
It does happen. It does happen.
Yeah, and, great.
You know, if it can happen to me, it can happen to anyone.
I know, I said that. If I can do it, you can do it. That was my line.
Yeah. Oh, sorry.
You just said it a little differently.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, Donna, it's about time for us to pack up our bags and shut down the show. So thank you very much for coming.
You're most welcome. Thank you for having me.
You're welcome. It was a great talk. And I interjected by great crashes of lightning and, you know, pouring of rain and too bad we don't have a real window in this room, because we would have also had flashes of lightning, but we just heard them. So, for all of you listeners out there, we'll be back next week. This is Phyllis Furumoto with Donna Stetzer, Reiki, Balancing Form and Essence.